Well, I assume that Bob Klein, as chair of the ICOC, which makes these awards, brought a bag of money with him. And for those who want to talk with him afterwards, I'm sure there'll be plenty available. Let me begin by saying what a wonderful morning this has been. Actually, it is a little bit of a deja vu for me because right after I joined CRM in March of 2005, there was a meeting in San Diego, and since I'm not a stem cell biologist and certainly wasn't then by training and by background, it was my first immersion in the field. It was a tremendously exciting meeting. I remember Dr. Jameson's talk from that meeting very well, and it is a great pleasure to be back here again. And I want to congratulate the organizers on two aspects of the meeting which seemed to me particularly noteworthy. Number one, it is the correct decision to, I think, have people from the local community. I think the quality is probably higher than if you had gone out and invited people from all over the world. But I think, seriously, I think the point being that this is really a community-building event, and to see all the local talent on display is extremely impressive, certainly to me and those of us at CRM. And the second point I want to commend you on is having young people speak, which I thought is just terrific, and it gives us some sense of the energy, the new ideas, the new systems, the new technologies that are being brought into play. And that is the future of this field, as you know. Let me just say a few words about our situation. I'm sure all of you know that we were stymied for the first 18 months of our existence in terms of giving out money because of litigation that was brought against us. The good news is that in April we got a very strong court decision that in the Superior Court that we are convinced will prevail. The more sobering news is our opponents, the litigants who are opponents of Proposition 71, well known to Bob from the campaign, will certainly appeal it all the way up and to the state Supreme Court. And if that is accepted, it may be as much as a year before we're able to access the public bond money. Now, in the meantime, Bob Klein has made a heroic effort and has gone out and raised so-called bond anticipation notes, and we have $14 million that has already been announced, and Bob may want to say more about this, but we are expecting shortly to announce another
$31 million.
And then I think everybody here knows that President Bush, with one stroke of the pen, brought stem cell research in California to life. It wasn't the stroke of the pen that we wanted, but it did have a beneficent side effect for us, and that is that shortly thereafter, Governor Schwarzenegger announced that he was going to loan us $150 million from the state funds. And so this really has, as Sherry Lansing, one of our board members, says, in my business, she said, we're in business. And so it is absolutely the case. So we saw as the first object to jumpstart human embryonic stem cell research in California, and so we have announced a series of three RFAs to begin this work in this area. The first two are out, the so-called seed grants for investigators that either young investigators or investigators in other fields meant to attract new people and new ideas into stem cell research. We are approved to give 30 of those. The deadline for receipt of applications was last Friday, and we have received 232 applications. So I think this indicates the tremendous interest, enthusiasm, and vitality of stem cell research in California waiting to be unleashed. The second RFA is for more established investigators in the field of human embryonic stem cell research, and we are approved by our board to award up to 25 of those, and the deadline for receiving those is next month. We will be reviewing the seed grants in late November, the comprehensive grants in January, and we expect to be making awards shortly in the early spring, let's say. The third RFA, which will be out, we hope, shortly, will be an RFA for shared laboratory research space for human embryonic stem cell research, that is, to help institutions provide space in which they can do research outside the federal guidelines. And we expect that RFA to be mentioned shortly. Let me make one other comment, and then I'll turn the microphone over to others, and that is that, as you may or may not know, we have been engaged over the last 6 months in putting together a scientific strategic plan, and we presented a draft of this plan to our board, the ICOC, at the October meeting. A good deal of work went into this. The meeting that Roger referred to earlier last October, held in San Francisco on charting new directions in stem cell research in California, was a first step of that priority of setting priorities for the plan. We interviewed over 70 people from around the world, asking their thoughts about what we should be doing. We had a series of public meetings for ICOC members and the public. We had focus group meetings. We devoted parts of two board meetings, ICOC meetings, to discussion of this. So after this extensive process, we put all these thoughts and recommendations into this draft plan. I encourage you to have a look at it. It's on our website. And if you have thoughts about it, please let us know. We will bring it back for final consideration in December. I won't go through the plan with you. Suffice it to say that we set out a series of 10-year goals, and the chief one being to establish clinical proof of principle, i.e. through a phase two trial, that replacement cell therapy based on human embryonic stem cells is effective in restoring function for at least one disease. And then we hope to have a number of other diseases in clinical trials by that time, and we set out another series of goals, and then we have a series of five-year goals, which we think will be necessary to get us to the 10-year goal. So we have milestones. We intend to periodically assess our progress at various times. We will be putting over that period of time about something less than $300 million into training programs of various sorts. And I was delighted to see the posters of the trainees that we already have going with the training programs here on the Mesa. And I was just saying to Senator Kehoe before that I hope you all realize that 25% of our training funds are here on the Mesa. So this says something about the community here. So at any rate, we also have money for facilities, up to 10% of the total. That is also discussed in the strategic plan. And then we have some 25 research initiatives that we have talked about. And we will be putting money into both fundamental research, into preclinical research and development, and into clinical work. And it's not quite one-third, one-third, one-third. There's the biggest item actually is preclinical research and development. A little bit less on the clinical side because we think it'll take a little time to get there. At least on a broad front, and also we hope to have some partners for that work, which has been built into our budget. So,
Zach,
I'll stop right there.
In practical terms, just one other thing, maybe Bob wants to take this as well. In practical terms, the clause in there about the 20% of matching funds, could you elaborate a little bit on that one, because that's confusing to some people.
Well, let me just say that's derived from Proposition 71, and I'll turn it over to our chair.
Sure. First of all, what I'd like to do is pay proper recognition to the leadership you have. Senator Keogh is tremendous as a leader in this area, and we need highly informed, sophisticated leadership in Sacramento. It is fabulous that this area has the benefit of that leadership. We're very appreciative of that. Secondly, as a theme of leadership, because we're in a critical stage of our advancement of the stem cell research mission, it would be appropriate to recognize that Dr. Ed Holmes, who's in the front row, is a former board member. He is viewed as our ambassador to Singapore. Dwayne Roth, who is a current board member, is also in the front row. And I don't see Dr. Tina Nova or Dr. Richard Murphy or Dr. John Reed. They're also board members. So you are extremely well represented in the San Diego area.
Rich Murphy is in New York raising funds for SALC, and John Reed apparently is in Florida doing something for the berm. So we could come back to those points later.
Yeah, yeah. We're hopeful that John is bringing money back from Florida. But I'd like to also recognize that Malum Burnham led the Burnham Institute to be the first nonprofit research institute in the state to endorse Proposition 71. It was courageous at the time because many people said that we could not win. It was totally impossible. In fact, there was a board member who is a tremendous asset to the board who will go unnamed who sent me an email at about that time and said, you have about as much chance as a snowball in hell. So it was a tremendous act of leadership. And in raising the $45 million in bond anticipation notes that funded the research fellowships you have here in San Diego and around the state, and moving our science agenda forward, John and Rebecca Moores were early in standing up as statewide leaders to commit to that, along with Irwin and Joan Jacobs and Steve Altman and Lisa Altman. But for someone like John Moores to stand up and say, you know, we've got bond anticipation notes here, and they have this disclosure on the bottom that says if you don't win in court, you've just made a gift to the state. Now, that's an act of real principled courage, putting your money behind science with courage in big capital letters. And it's my understanding that 10 days ago when the governor was here in San Diego, he pointed to the leadership from San Diego all the way up to San Francisco of civic leaders like John who had stood up and made commitments. And he essentially said, you know, it gave me great political support to allow me to make this $150 million loan, knowing no one would shoot at me, because these civic leaders and their attorneys looked at our chances of prevailing in litigation, decided we would win. And so if the private civic donors can put their money behind this lawsuit, and knowing we're going to win and move science forward, then certainly the state should be able to. So I think we owed a big round of applause to John and all those others. Now, the question at hand is leverage. And the leverage only applies in when you have equal scientific merit. So we always want to follow the same, the best science. But of course, when competition is very substantial, there can be a lot of grants that fall into an area where then where we get the leverage becomes relevant. I would hope that with the tremendous outpouring of scientific grants we've had, assuming that the quality of the science holds up in the peer review process, that the board can find more money somewhere. Now, John, we're not going to call you. But we'd hopeful we find some money in the state because it is a tremendous start to have this kind of an enthusiastic response to the scientific staff's proposals. And if we look back to 1985, the NIH funded about 35% of all grant proposals. And as Dr. Hall says in this strategic plan, the average age of NIH grant recipients is now 42 years old. We just can't have that happen. People need to be recognized earlier in their careers for tremendous ideas. So we're going to need to do better than the NIH, who may be funding this year at 8 or 9% of the grant applications. We need to find the money to reward the great scientific enthusiasm, commitment, and discipline that is represented by the people in this room and the people around the state dedicated to this area. The leverage will help us, and hopefully there are patient and civic organizations around the country who will bring dollars in, recognizing the tremendous science that's on the table and the fact that the momentum is here in California to augment the applications and to get more of them funded. I think at this point, there's some other great speakers on the table, and we should pass that ball to them. And
fine.
If there's questions, I can come back later.
Okay. Just one quick comment on what happens from both of you, perhaps, before we move on to John and Malin. What happens, suppose, after the next election at NIH flood, the funding becomes easier to achieve? I mean, does that mean that this is no longer so important in California?
Well, let me make 2 points. One is that as we all know, the NIH budget is extremely constrained right now. And even if one were to take off the federal restrictions, the government is not going to pour huge amounts of money into stem cell research unless they take it from somewhere else, in human embryonic stem cell research, unless they take it from somewhere else. They're currently spending about $39 million per year on human stem cell research within the federal guidelines. And so the money's just not there is a matter of concern to all of us. Second, I think it provides another source of grants for people within the state of California. Investigators here can get both NIH and California money, and I think the more funding sources there are, the better. So I think it would be great news if that were to happen. I think it will by no means make us irrelevant.
Yeah. And John, you can go ahead.
Yeah, if I can augment that, when we look back to the Clinton administration, they wanted to fund some of the preliminary exploratory work in embryonic stem cells. They've, in fact, marshaled an entire commission to put out medical and ethical standards. But after a year's worth of work, sometime under armed guard, that commission put out its findings. And you can see as a matter of history that on the same day the commission put out its findings, there's a presidential letter that withdrew that those rules and regulations. The reason they were withdrawn is that the House elections had gone against the president that fall. And essentially what he was being told was, if you want NIH funding, you can't move forward with this. So the NIH funding that was sitting there ready to be triggered by the release of these regulations was not released. And he had to withdraw support. What that tells us is a very critical lesson, which is if you want stability in funding that drives careers and allows people to make career choices and also protect their families, if you want institutions to be able to build entire departments and new buildings committed to this area of research, you need a long, stable source of funding that is not politically volatile. Well, 7 million voters cast their vote in 2004 to provide both of those, because we have legal stability since the standards, which are thankfully now the gold standard following the National Academy's lead, our panel has put out medical and ethical standards that Zach's staff has put into effect. We have medical and ethical standards that are under the control of the board, and we have about really 12 years of funding, because we'll act more at an average of about $250 million a year. So with stability of funding, California will continue to provide something that structurally the federal government can't. Because unless you can guarantee us that you're going to control the House and the Senate and the presidency in one party for 10 years, you're not going to have stability. So California is going to provide a critical element, stability and long-term optimization of research, not something built on two-year cycles that can be interrupted drastically, interrupting brilliant ideas implementation.
John, can you comment on that?
I have a question. First of all, Bob's one of the best people I've ever met. He's been absolutely tireless. I don't know how you've done what you did, but this state owes you a huge debt of gratitude. And there will be a lot of people that in future generations that will not know who you were, not know what you did, but their life will be better. I'm very pleased to have a small involvement. But let me ask you, how many, we talked a little bit about this at lunch, how many countries, how many other states do you think have taken some inspiration on what happened in California, what you did? It's unlikely the federal government is going to change directions tomorrow morning. I'm sure that's correct. But I wonder if something more profound is actually happening.
Well, John, it's critically important to realize that my efforts can only represent the potential that's in this room and other scientific aggregations of talent around the state. The fact that you have so much talent here marshaled made this possible and made it feasible. But to answer your question, in England there was something created called the Patterson Report that went to the Prime Minister that has resulted in them tripling their commitment to stem cell research based upon the reference that they had to stay competitive with California, and San Diego was predominantly one of the major focuses in that report. In just getting back from Australia, as was mentioned here, the Prime Minister of the state of Victoria, in standing up for the biotech research capacity and academic research capacity in the state of Victoria, which has about 35% of Australia's capacity, their position was that they're part of this bold partnership that is the joint venture between UC San Diego and its affiliates, the other research institutions in this room, with Monash University and the Australian Stem Cell Center, which is 9 research institutions in Australia. And the Premier's position was he was not going to let that momentum stop. If Australia voted in the next 2 months against the Lockhart Commission recommending this is a critical area for medical research to reduce human suffering, that the state of Victoria was going to stand up and fund it. It was not going to be stopped in Australia, and they were going to honor their partnership with San Diego. So it was quite appropriate. I just got back 2 days ago to recognize that San Diego's leadership has extended around the world. But as you look at different areas of the world, the European Union looked at California's voters and the research going here and doubled their budget. Country after country is involved. And Dr. Hall and Arlene Chu participate in the 17-nation research forum called the International Stem Cell Forum that coordinates globally research in this area. $3 billion is a lot of money, but from a patient advocate's viewpoint and a scientific viewpoint, we need all the global resources we can marshal. And the California is the only governmental state in the world that was invited in on a peer relationship with those nations in that 17-nation forum. So we have a big burden to carry, and I'm praying that you're going to do it for us.
I gather, Zach, there's a meeting in England next month, which is an international meeting between England and California. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. John, would you like to expand a little bit more? I mean, do you have some, having put all this effort in so far, you and Malin, what's the vision for this area, and why Florida?
Well, two questions. The second is easier to answer. Why Florida? Jeb Bush actually was the guy that started the process. He found Richard Lerner ultimately. He found the Burnham Institute put together. It was really ugly. It's much like politics. You don't want to get too close to it while the sausage is being made. But it seems to have worked, and I believe the view in the institutions, and Malin can certainly speak for the Burnham, is that this is highly accretive. That is, we end up getting more better researchers involved into the system. One of the things that Scripps initially decided to do was we were not going to drain California resources for the benefit of Florida, and vice versa. These guys pretty well stand on their own, and yet they're stronger together. It's much like our stem cell consortium in San Diego. The four organizations all have terrific stories, but together we're much stronger.
Malin, do you want to comment on that?
Yes, I'm happy to. I've been asked several times, why is the Burnham Institute going to Florida? Well, first of all, we're not moving. Our headquarters is staying here. All of our scientists, all of our capital, as John just suggested, with Scripps, is going to stay here, is not going elsewhere. The simple answer is politics. Chris, politics. And that is, the state of Florida over the last several years has been able to generate an excess of revenues over expenses. Substantial. What are they going to do with them? They're smart enough to decide that they'll take at least a portion of that and put in to build a new industry, the new industry being medical research. Because not only are there high-paying jobs, but there's a lot of leverage and all the other vendors and so on and so forth that circle around these kind of clusters. So that's their incentive, and that's why they're doing it. In our case, between the state, the county of Orange, the city of Orlando, and private developers, they are giving us, not granting, not loaning, giving us at the Burnham less than these guys got, but nevertheless $340 million over 10 years to do more science than we would have done otherwise. In other words, over that period of time, we'll be doing somewhere between 20 and 30% more science than we would have been staying alone here in California. And that's really what it's all about.
Chris, do you want to comment on the politics from the California perspective at this point?
Yes, thanks. And I can't get into Florida the way John and Malum can because they're on the ground there and are, you know, active in negotiations. And I applaud Florida for what they're doing. It's a bright thing, smart and forward-looking. But California's been doing that for 50 years. The Mesa that we're sitting on today was set aside for research decades ago. The University of California was carved out of Pueblo lands by the city of San Diego, and the state of California pours hundreds of millions of dollars into the UC system every year and has done for years and years. And the synergy that we see here today between the university and public dollars and private sector investment, it's undeniable. When I walked in, I wasn't here this morning, and, you know, I could tell just from the lunchroom activity that the energy level was high and there's a lot of buzz. So I'm very proud of what California has done. And, you know, if Florida can replicate it in any way, they should. And I guess they've made a step in that direction. But the infrastructure here in California is so much more advanced, so much more sophisticated. Somebody used that word. We have to continue to invest in it, but there's no reason to apologize or to step back. I wonder if the Florida voters would have supported something like Proposition 71.
No.
It takes a whole, you know, you've got to drill down. You know, it's great that the state came up with $300 million of public money to invest in the research. It's $300 million that didn't go somewhere else in their budget. If they've got extra, great. But California is doing wonderful, wonderful things. The stories that the four of you tell about what has already been done from the beginning of the campaign to today, you know, even with the court setbacks, that you can find a way around those kind of impediments and still go forward with the projects is something that's to be commended. So we said at the lunch table, I'm not an expert in stem cell research. I'm the state senator for this area, and as a city council member and assembly member, I've always understood, thanks to many people in this audience educating me, how incredibly important this sector is, you know, economically to San Diego, that we stay in the lead and that we continue to invest and make room and, as I said, infrastructure for private companies and the university to go forward with this research. But I'll just close by saying it's the research that the young scientists are doing here today that I've heard you all mention over lunch. That's what's going to really make this happen. And as long as you are happy here and you have the laboratories and the data and the all the materials you need to do the research, then I think San Diego and California will stay in the lead. And again, you know, to the voters of this state who decided to invest billions of dollars in stem cells, that is stem cell research, that is the bottom line. That is what's going to keep California in front.
I'm just curious, how many, it would have been different this morning, obviously, but how many stem cell researchers are actually in the room right now? Could you just stick a hand up?
You're to be applauded.
So are there any numbers then available on how much the California initiative actually attracted people to California, migration of people coming in? Is there any figures on that?
Well, we can't keep track of it. We recently, there was a New England Journal editorial, and we gave them 8 examples of people that we knew that had come in, but someone told me they had met just recently with a whole group of young researchers at UCLA, most of whom I was not aware of. And so we don't have a systematic way of tracking it, but every institution I know is recruiting. And I will tell you something anecdotally. We have a review committee of scientists, stem cell scientists, all of whom are from outside of California. And we are now gearing up to do reviews after the governor has loaned us this money. And we've had 2 and perhaps 3. We're still talking to one of them. People call us up and say, I'm actually going to have to step off your review panel because I'm in discussion with the California institution.
Oh.
About the possibility of coming or affiliating or doing something. And so I think it's, and the scientists in the room will know this probably better than I through their contacts around the country, but it's had a tremendous impact. And I think, frankly, you know, they just gave out starter grants at Harvard in stem cell research. They did the same at Memorial Sloan Kettering, Rockefeller, and Cornell, the sort of trio there, and they were giving out $50,000, I think, one-year grants. We were offering for seed grants $200,000 of support for 2 years. And I think it's that discrepancy, the fact that this is not small, one-time, as important as philanthropy is, philanthropic money, which is what's supporting it in Boston and in New York. But the point that Bob made earlier, this is long-term substantial support, and I think it's going to make a huge difference.
Well,
yeah, just to follow on Dr. Hall's point, we are tremendously grateful that there's leverage in 2005 and 2006 coming from civic leadership, particularly while we've been ramping up to break through the court issues. There's $200 million we tallied around the state, only counting about $45 million of ours coming from the bond anticipation notes. So it's actually over $200 million, which means there's over $150 million in civic support in California alone that's come to the fore because the civic leadership understands there's state support and continuity. There's an ability to really break through an entire new frontier of medicine. But really answering the balance of John Moore's question that I didn't hit on, New York right now, Spitzer is leading in the gubernatorial race. He's agreed or pledged to do a $1 billion program there, patterned after California. In Illinois, they want to do $1 billion. In New Jersey, the figure is $390 million, of which $90 million, the bonds have actually already been funded. Maryland is $100 million. Connecticut is $100 million. It's already in place. So you can go through the states. We're getting really good support around the country as the country rises up in the defense of science, not accepting this theory that the ideological fringe groups tried to prove in California, which is that they could destroy any democratic or any democratic mandate for scientific or medical research they disagreed with just by tying it up in the courts. By defeating that case study in California, we've given confidence to other states that they could move forward and break through and get their grants out. So we're seeing great momentum across the country.
Is there any nervousness, though, in terms of speed here? You were talking about something of a slowdown there for a year. You have 232 applications in, right? They have to be decided. The money has to get out somewhere in the interim. If these other initiatives go through, if Ed Holmes and Philip Yeo keep seducing people after Singapore and so on, is there any nervousness about losing some momentum?
In fact, we feel quite the opposite now. We are moving. We will have money out within the next 6 months. There's no question about that. And we are moving as fast as we can. At CRM with the board to get the money out. And we are going to call on an extraordinary effort from our reviewers from across the country, who, again, I think out of their sense of goodwill and support for what's going on in California, they don't profit from this at all. In fact, if anything, it's money to support their competitors. But they are willing, actually, to take on quite a substantial job of reviewing these grants on short notice. So I think we are going to move the money out very quickly, and I think the sense, if anything, our pulse is quickening here in California as we get going on this great project.
John and Malin, do you have a thought on the sort of future vision for this enterprise?
Actually, let me ask, before I answer that, because I think it would be helpful, can you, in one paragraph, come up with a legal timeline? Because I think that's probably more confusing to most people than any other issue.
Certainly. The opposition will drag it out to the extent they can. The courts have given us expedited treatment. We're in the Court of Appeals already with the briefs filed. We would hope to be out of the Court of Appeals by February or March, which is about 30 days later than we had hoped because of administrative hang-ups in the courts. We hope that the Supreme Court refuses jurisdiction, and if that occurs, we could have a decision as early as June or somewhere reasonably in the June-September period. My view is always, I will say, the optimistic one. We have to push for the very best solution at the earliest possible date. If that gets drug out further, we have a plan that hopefully the new treasurer and controller and governor will endorse that will allow us to move forward with bonds regardless of that timeline, assuming we have a good decision out of the Court of Appeals. We have 100 years of court precedent behind us, 100 years. I mean, this is a delaying tactic. We will win, and what's critical is to maintain the momentum.
And in response to your question as to what is this, you know, what are the long-term implications? My view is that there may be just a little different than perhaps everybody else's. I'd like to think this represents the end to sort of a populist litigation. I mean, it's still sad that a handful of people that have access to a word processor and a filing fee can overcome a very substantial number of voters. Most of us grew up in the country thinking that once something's been voted on, it's over. And hopefully this sort of crazy litigation will go away. I don't think anybody really thought the litigation, even though it drove Bob nuts, had much chance because delay is always the death of projects. So perhaps the best that can be said out of all this is that people in California want to be heard. I mean, they did vote. I'm confident that something else will come up. And I think people were telling everyone as loud as they could that they will support research, a significant amount of money. $3 billion is a lot of money. And I expect, frankly, another administration to spend a lot more money on medical research across the country, and I think that will happen.
Malin?
On a maybe a parallel side issue here, let me make a pitch to Bob and Zach and their team and board members and all. I have heard, and maybe it's just rumor, maybe it's the press, whatever, that somebody is thinking about maybe establishing 15 centers of excellence in research and so on and so forth around the state. My concern and my pitch is that, as you can determine what we think in San Diego, the reason we put this San Diego Stem Cell Consortium together is because we believe that 1 + 1 + 1 + 1 adds up to a lot more than 4, and maybe like 10. And obviously, you're going to have to spread these dollars around on a fair basis. If you understand that as well as anybody else does. I would hope that fairness would give a lot more credence to quality of science than geography, politics, or whatever else comes into it. And so that's why we've gotten together with this consortium. And we think by doing so that we can provide better quality, deeper, wider, so on and so forth, science by doing so. And we hope that you and your board will recognize that.
Do you want to respond to that, Bob?
I'll respond, and then Dr. Hall, I think, should as well. As a patient advocate, if you're a father of a child with juvenile diabetes and your mother's dying with Alzheimer's, you're committed to the best science. And you know that you're part of a community of patients, and it may be that cancer or heart disease is what's cured, and they're, but I hope that at least the science will give us enough knowledge that maybe my son does not lose his kidneys or go blind or end his life with an amputation. But in order to get to those goals, we have to be committed to the very best science on behalf of the patients and the people of this state. Dr. Hall, in his strategic plan, suggested perhaps 5 primary centers. The board hasn't made a decision, but certainly we can understand the compelling case of the extraordinary talent in the 4 institutions that are coming together here. If you were on another continent, it would knock you off your feet. So we get this message loud and clear, and a tremendous applause to the collaboration between these institutions, because there's every bit of evidence out there that together the sum of the parts are the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So in recognizing that strategic advantage you have, it's a scientific cooperation. It's going to be competitive on science and cost being effective. But I am extremely impressed from what I've seen. We have to wait for the real competition. But as parameters, I am not aware at the board level of any desire to distribute funds or geographically for distribution's sake.
Just 2 quick points. One is, I think the number 15 must come from the RFA that we're currently considering, and that is for a relatively small amount of space, 1 to 2,000 square feet of shared laboratory space, and the idea is to try to seed those at a number of institutions to get work started, jumpstart human embryonic stem cell research in California. And then, as Bob said, we anticipate, and the strategic plan makes a suggestion about making larger investment in a few places, and the board will make that decision when the time comes. But so that's the situation. The other thing, just to underline and echo what Bob said, we are tremendously impressed with what's happening here, and I think the kind of formation of a collaborative community, what you're doing here, I think, provides a wonderful example for the rest of the state. We want to support it. We are in favor of it. I know from personal experience how hard it is to get different institutions to work together, how many institutional barriers there are. My experience with the University of California, Mr. Moores may know a little bit about that, but it is... it's not easy, and I think that you, I don't know where Mark Ellisman is, but his networking slide and the point he made about having people to work together across institutional boundaries to form a larger, more effective community, technology permits that, science demands it, and we are very supportive of it. So we applaud what you're doing, and we will do what we can through our policies to offer support for you.
There may be a partial answer to a couple of the questions that have come in on cards, and Mark's, what Mark does may be a partial answer as well. There's one question here which says, the consortium is another example of San Diego's unique entrepreneurial spirit. Are there cooperative research agreements among the parties in the consortium, and what is their nature as regards IP matters? Does anybody know to speak to that one? This is what we call a good question. IP all over, I see. All right. Along with that, there was a question that says here, small stem cell companies will probably be the vehicle to study stem cell-related issues. When will they be eligible for funds? And coupled with that, how do the smaller research institutions fit in with the bigger ones?
So the two parts to that question, number one is we have, CIRM has an IP policy for nonprofit institutions, which has now been approved by the board and with some small changes is well on its way to becoming state regulations. And it is under those IP provisions that we will be awarding funds for nonprofit institutions. We are currently, under the leadership of Ed Penhote and his deputy, Mary Maxson, working on our intellectual policy property for for-profit institutions. And we are hard at work on that and hope to move that, get board approval on that over the next couple of meetings. But until that is done, we will not be able to, we're not quite ready to give money to for-profit institutions. However, we do plan to do so, and the strategic plan points out that in several critical areas, there is expertise and knowledge and work in the for-profit sector that we absolutely need in order to turn the research that's done in laboratories into therapies for people. Second question, what about smaller institutions? If you recall, we our training grants were awarded in tiers. That is, you could get, anyhow, they were sized. And the point of that was to recognize that different institutions have different capabilities and that a small institution may have superb expertise in a fairly restricted area or may be able to offer something that larger institutions don't, and to have a small institution compete head-to-head with the larger one, we thought was to miss that point. And so we offered three levels of support, basically, and institutions could choose whether or not they would go in for the relatively small or the middle or the top level of support. And although the board has not pronounced on this yet or even considered it in any detail, my guess is that there may be some provision for some sort of smaller scale facilities for small institutions, but we haven't really addressed that. But we do recognize that I think the Burnham is a good example of an institution that whose representation in stem cell research is far out of proportion to its size, and we want to recognize the strength of those institutions and capitalize on the advantages that they offer.
Thanks. John, you had a point?
Well, I'd like to elaborate, if I could, on my shrug to the previous question. I don't have much to say about the IP, except I believe, and let me refer to Scott Wolf, who is our long-suffering lawyer in trying to put the consortium together. But I believe the consortium contemplates that the IP will remain with the member, the members. But as to whether there are agreements between the members, that would be outside the scope of, even though it clearly would contemplate the existence of the consortium.
Bob?
Just as another comment on the for-profit side, the initiative contemplates as well the ability to do loans on the for-profit side. We should realize that those loans could provide a source of funding in the outer years, 9, 10, 11, and 12, when we need early stage proof of concept, preclinical and clinical work, where the repayments of the loans from the early years can come back in. So looking at the cash flow of the agency, the board has not reached a policy on this. The peer review committee has not recommended a policy, nor has Dr. Hall recommended a policy on how to deal with loans. But conceptually, if you had a portfolio of loans and a third were completely wiped out, a third just paid back principal, and a third paid back three times principal, you would have a little bit more than your original principal amount. If that were $500 million, that $500 million coming back in those critical years at the later stages of the development of some of the early ideas could be a really important additional leverage for the research and allow us to hold our own in real dollars against inflation.
Chris, you, I think there was something you were trying to say earlier that we didn't get to.
When Robert was talking about the activities in the other states, I think what happened is, you know, Robert with Proposition 71 sort of, you know, fired the shot heard around the world and did it at a time, you know, in the previous election cycle when the red-blue, for want of a better term, divisive issues were, you know, very much holding prominence across the country, but because of California's politics, you were able to get it through and an excellent campaign and the right message. And so now the other states are playing catch up, and the enormous amount of public investment that's going into this in Denver and California, I think has, you know, really caused them to notice and caused business to notice in other states because, you know, the one of the important results of this is, will be patents and copyrights and innovative, important, and, you know, at least initially probably expensive, maybe pharmaceuticals, procedures, devices, whatever. So I think, you know, you have jump-started something that now many other states are going to try to replicate and catch up to California in this endeavor, and you're to be applauded for that. And you're also helping to keep California out in front.
Yeah. Well, before we close, because we have to shift to another panel with Mike Kalishman, since you're in the front row, do either of you gentlemen have anything to say? Questions? Dwayne?
I was only going to point out that Chris has got a red suit.
No.
And Dwayne, you have a blue one on.
So I would like to thank Malin Burnham, John Moores, Robert Klein, Zach Hall, and Christine Kehoe for all that they have done and all that they're going to do. Thank you very much.